Welcome to the September issue of Notables from Clarity Capital Management. This is Eric Thomas.
And this is Ryan Moore.
We thought we would try out a new form of our monthly-ish newsletter by putting out a verbal form of the issue. We know how busy folks are with their daily lives and want to make it easy for everyone to hear our updates. Here's our discussion on our most recent Notables issue. This recording was made on Friday, September 17th, 2021. Thanks for listening. Thanks again, everybody, for joining Ryan and I in our conversation around the new proposed tax changes that came out this week. Ryan and I are both trying this new thing out with the recording of our Notables articles. So thanks for joining us, and hopefully we hear a lot of feedback from you all on whether or not this is a good resource, and hopefully making it a lot easier for you to kind of hear what we have going on here. So as you may have heard, the House Ways and Means Committee of Congress has put out some more concrete details around the proposed tax law changes. Ryan and I have both been spending a lot of time on reviewing it and listening to how it's going to affect kind of all of our clients, and we're excited to talk about. So Ryan, you want to talk a little bit about how long this thing is and give us some more details around it?
Sure, yeah. So it's pretty long. So there's the American Families Plan, and then there's this subtitle I. This is called Responsibly Funding Our Priorities. And in this section is what we're kind of focusing on today, right? This section of the bill, it's about 225 pages, and it has quite a bit of proposed tax-related changes. so there's a ton going on in this whole bill. We're going to focus on some of kind of the main tax-related items of this subtitle, and you know, there's plenty of other things that we just can't include in this conversation, right? That it would simply be too long. So we're going to focus on the ones that we felt are most impactful to most of our clients.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So today, also just keep in mind that this is just the current version. It's not technically law yet, but we do think that a lot of these things are going to make it through to final law. And we also think that it's going to have a pretty high likelihood of passing. So although we're going to see some changes, we expect that a lot of this stuff is actually going to hold true.
And not to mention, we don't know when those changes would actually be finalized. I think that's an important point here. You know, if we go back in time to, what was it, the Tax Jobs Act, the end of 2017, that one got passed right at the very end of the year, right? I mean, several days before the calendar end of the year. And, you know, that same thing could happen here. So we have to be mindful of potentially planning around these things that, you know, this could get passed right up at, you know, end of the year. And that leaves very little time for actually making some changes ahead of that. So that's kind of why we're thinking through on these things ahead of time.
Yeah, that's a great point. All right, so let's get right into it. So what's going to happen here is I'll just ask Ryan some questions around the bill. And Ryan, if you'd love to provide a little bit of details around the bill, that'd be great. So let's start with income tax. I know one of the big takeaways of the bill is it's going to be basically increasing taxes on folks that are making a higher marginal amount of money. So maybe you can explain a little bit on income taxes and how the new proposed plan affects taxpayers.
Sure. So the bill is proposing increasing that top federal marginal rate from what's currently 37% to 39.6%. And this is going to be for taxable income over $400,000 for single filers and $450,000 for joint filers. So that's kind of the big change there. Now, in addition to changing just the marginal rate, they're actually kind of squishing down the current 32% bracket a little and the 35% bracket a lot. And it would create that new top bracket of 39.6 above that. The goal there is just trying to get more income into that higher or that top marginal bracket a little bit sooner. So that's kind of the big change there on the marginal tax increases.
Great, thanks. Yeah, I think one of the other things that we'll see a lot in this plan is that high income, quote unquote, we kind of see that at the $400,000 or $450,000 limit for folks. So that's kind of like the new definition that the bill is kind of saying is higher income. So I thought that was interesting too. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so can you also explain kind of how the capital gains treatment works now, or will potentially work?
Sure. So in this particular case, they are talking about raising the top capital gains tax rate from what's currently 20% up to 25%. And this would kick in, again, at those same income levels, $400,000 for single, $450,000 for joint filers. The nice thing is the original capital gains rates still remain unchanged under these limits. So still 15%. And then zero before, I don't remember the exact bracket ranges there on those, but the bottom line is the original capital gains rates below the top one are unchanging.
Yeah, great.
And one thing I'll add too that's not in this and had been kicked around by, I think, the Biden plan in Congress was actually eliminating the step up in basis upon death, and that is something that's not included in this bill, which I think is certainly a helpful thing for most families in their estates.
Yeah, that's a great point. So Ryan's referring to the step up in basis. If somebody were to pass away, and then the person who inherits the money gets to use the date of death step up of the basis of that security or ownership. So that was not included, to your point. The other thing I thought was interesting, Ryan, was under the Biden plan, although the top capital gains rate is changing to 25%, it isn't as high as the Biden administration had initially wanted. They were talking about aligning it with the income tax rates. So it'd be something around the 39% rate. So 25 is a lot better than 39%. So that, I thought that was interesting.
Indeed. And we're forgetting one really important part about this. The effective date, again, if this bill sticks, the effective date on this is September 13th of this year, 2021, one day prior to the release of this bill. So if you sold prior to that, congratulations. If you didn't, and this bill passes as it's currently written, then after that, the new rate applies. We'll see if that one sticks or not. The only exception to this would be is if you had a binding contract to sell in place prior to this being written. So let's say, for example, selling a property and you had a contract written up, by a buyer, you as the seller, then the old rates would apply to
that. Yeah, great point. And again, we'll see. I've been questioning whether or not that's going to stick as far as an effective date. So it'll be interesting to see whether or not that does make it in there as far as the effective date goes. A lot of folks think that it actually will stick. So I thought that was interesting. All right, getting deeper into the weeds here. Do you want to talk a little bit about S-Corps?
Yeah, so currently, if you have an S-Corp and you have profits that are distributed to you as the owner of an S-Corp, currently, there is no there's no payroll taxes on that, so no self-employment taxes, otherwise referred to. So half Social Security tax and Medicare tax, those don't apply on S corp profit distributions. What they're talking about here is putting a 3.8% surtax for taxpayers on S corp profit distributions. But this would apply only to taxpayers with a modified adjusted gross income over $400,000 for single filers and $500,000 for joint filers. And I'm sorry for the confusion here. You're going to hear us probably refer to things like taxable income, adjusted gross income, modified adjusted gross income. That's just kind of part of the deal here. We're not going to go into the real specifics of what those mean. We don't have time for that. But in this particular case, modified adjusted gross income on those levels. So what that could mean is the top true rate for an S corp owner, because again, we're talking about the increase on regular income tax plus the surtax on S corp distributions. An S corp owner could have a true tax rate of 43.4%. After this, again, if they go into effect.
Yeah, great point. And then, yeah, can you share a little bit on the Section 199A deduction? I mean, that sounded really complicated, but it's just the QBI deduction.
Yeah, so qualified business income deduction. You know, currently there is a deduction of 20% there for, say, you're an S corp or a sole proprietor. That's going to be limited now for those at that same income level, 400,000 and 500,000 for joint filers. That'd be something we would talk in more depth with on an individual basis, but essentially it's putting a cap on where you can claim that deduction.
All right. Well, thanks for that. This is the one that we probably should actually have at the beginning of the email, because I think it's going to affect a lot of folks and a lot of our clients. So this is the one that everyone should focus on. Ryan and I's one of our favorite things in the world is the backdoor Roth strategy. So can you talk a little bit about that, Ryan? And this one's a, you know, quite a big change there.
Well, we love utilizing a backdoor Roth for higher earning individuals. You know, there is a phase out to where you can contribute to a Roth IRA, and if you earn over that amount, you cannot. So one strategy we utilize is the backdoor Roth, where we can actually put non-deductible contributions into an IRA, i.e. after-tax dollars, and convert those to a Roth. This rule is going away, unfortunately. It looks like, you know, for years Congress has said they don't like it, but they've never said you can't do it. I think that's finally catching up here, and they're saying now we're going to eliminate this. You can no longer do the backdoor Roth contribution strategy. I'm pretty upset about this. I don't understand why, but it is what it is. And in starting January 1st of 2022, that's when this would take effect. So, you know, as we said earlier in the discussion, this is one of those things that we're going to want to accelerate for folks up until year end, just in preparation that this might pass.
Yeah, great point. And also the same thing for mega backdoor Roth strategies. So no more after-tax contributions and employer plans and being immediately converted to Roth as well for a Roth 401k or Roth IRA.
Right, right.
Yeah, and then the other interesting thing of the plan is Roth conversions. So folks moving from money from traditional IRAs or pre-tax money to after-tax money in Roth, you know, that's something that we like to encourage folks to do. So Ryan, can you talk about that a little bit too?
Yeah, in this bill then, Roth conversions for taxpayers in that highest ordinary income tax bracket will be prohibited from those Roth conversions starting in January of 2032. And that's not a typo. I'm not saying that wrong. It is actually a 10-year window that you can convert pre-tax accounts to Roth and pay taxes up front. You know, this is one of those things that I think IRS loves current money. And this is a way for folks to, or for Congress to say, let's encourage people to accelerate these conversions so we can get some tax revenue in the door and then eventually put the kibosh on that and shut it off at that point in time. I think a lot of these things are around, you know, you've had this situation early in the year. Peter Van Thiel, he was an investor out there, and this article came out saying that he had amassed a $5 billion fortune inside of a Roth IRA that started with a $2,000 investment. And I think that captured a lot of attention. And so this is a way of helping limit how much money can go into these Roth IRAs that have some clear benefits to people down the road. So here we are.
So there it is. No more backdoor Roth contributions. No more mega backdoor Roth contributions. That's huge for us. So something to keep in mind.
Yeah, and I think this is one of those that unfortunately is probably going to stick in there. I don't see Congress you know, fighting over whether this one stays or not. I think it's, you know, it's not consequential enough. So we'll see though.
We'll see. All right. So yeah. So shifting into kind of retirement plans, this isn't too big of a change, I don't think, but Ryan, can you talk a little bit about the limits on high income earners and putting money into a retirement plan?
This one is one that you and I have talked about as being fairly ridiculous as well, that the bill is prohibiting IRA contributions if taxable income is over $400,000 for single filers, $450,000 for joint filers, and the total value of IRA and defined contribution plans like 401ks is over 10 million. I don't understand why they're concerned about an IRA contribution, which is maxed at 6,000 or 7,000 with the catch up. that's a fraction of a likely balance there. I don't really understand it, but that's how it's being written here in this particular case.
Yeah, that's kind of a wild one, because if you're able to somehow contribute to an IRA, if you're making that much money, it'd be a pretty interesting situation. It's not really that useful.
Yeah, it would likely be a fraction of a fraction.
Right. Yeah, and the other one that is interesting too is that it imposes required RMDs or required minimum distributions on larger retirement accounts if you have a $10 million in those accounts and you are a high income earner. So that was an interesting one too.
Yeah, and what's interesting about that too, and I need to get a little clarity on, is that actually might apply for people younger than standard RMD age, forcing some money out early. It's trying to accelerate some tax revenue. And
yep, that's the way I read it too, is even if you're under that RMD age or 72. All right, some mild changes in wash sale rules. You want to talk about that, Ryan?
So in this case, the plan is now incorporating wash sale rules being applied to things like cryptocurrency or digital assets, foreign currencies and commodities. Currently, there is no wash sale rule on crypto. So let's talk about wash sales for just a moment. What that means is, Eric, I can't sell something at a loss, take that loss on my taxes, right? And buy that same thing back the very next day and claim that loss. It doesn't work that way. You have to wait a certain period of time before you can buy back that security or something substantially similar. So really there's a 30-day period before and after the purchase, and that never existed on crypto. So you know, you could have a loss, sell it, capture that loss, and buy it right back. And now they've kind of caught onto that one and say, okay, we're going to apply some actual wash sale rules to that now. So, I believe this one starts in 2022. So, you got a few more months.
Yeah, that's right. Also just a quick note that it also applies to foreign currencies and commodities, which I think you said, Ryan.
Indeed. Yep.
All right. And let's talk a little bit about business losses moving right on. We're not going to do a whole recording on cryptocurrencies. We'll wait around for that. So TBD on that one. Let's talk about business losses. Ryan, you want to cover that one?
Yeah, just a quick one here. It makes permanent the current limit on excess business losses, which is considered a loss over $250,000 for single, $500,000 for joint filers. Those losses are disallowed and they're actually carried over the following year. So they're just putting some limits on that. So, but that, you know, that's all we probably need to go into here at this
Sure.
point.
Shifting gears to child care or child tax credits and dependent care credits. This was an interesting one and something that a lot of folks expected to happen. We saw a lot of different changes happening with child tax credits, come out with some of the new coronavirus relief packages. So it looks like we're just extending those into permanent, or actually until 2025. So Ryan, you want to talk about those?
Yeah, and that's the child tax credit. It was increased and made into monthly advance payments that started here in July of this year. Again, they're extending that, as Eric alluded to. $250 per qualifying child aged 6 to 17, or $300 per child age 0 through 5 through 2025. It is a fully refundable credit. That's not changing. That means if you had no tax liability, you still receive the credit. So I think it's been beneficial for a lot of families, particularly lower income families. So I think this is, it's positive. So it'll be just an extension of kind of what's currently in place right now. And then there's the increased child dependent care credit. So that being, you know, if you have a child in daycare, for instance, and you're paying daycare costs, there is that dependent care credit to help out with those expenses. So $8,000 for one qualifying individual or 16,000 for multiple. So that's a big increase from what the old dependent care credits were. And there is a phase out on these, 125,000 of adjusted gross income. It reduces that credit from 50% to 20%, and then at 400,000 of adjusted gross income, reducing the credit from 20% all the way down to zero. So it's a slow phase out there. But all in all, nothing real new there from this year, just an extension of what's in place.
Yeah, I've been talking a lot about this one too, just because it's an interesting thing. You know, I think over the last decade or so, we've been hearing different tax or economic strategies, universal basic income for all, or some of these more widely talked about things in the progressive agenda. And this is one that actually gets pretty close to that. If you have a kid, so I thought that's been interesting. We won't get into the politics of that, but it is basically income for folks with kids, even if you don't pay taxes, which is an interesting thing. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Right. And it's helpful for families of multiple children and, just the cost of care. And there's plenty of people that maybe don't need the monthly advance payments. So there's ways to opt out of that. And something to keep in mind, if you haven't opted out of that, what that might mean for your tax return. But we won't go into that now.
Great. So, similar credit for caregiver expenses. You want to get into that, Ryan?
And that's just a quick one too. It introduces a new non-refundable credit for expenses paid or incurred by a qualified care recipient. So let's say, for instance, you have elderly family member receiving care, then there is a maximum $4,000 credit for that. That does have a relatively low phase out, though, before that starts to go away at $75,000 of income. So this is something new. It's never existed before. So that's something to watch.
Yeah, great. And then kind of wrapping up here, do you want to share a little bit? I don't think this affects too many of our clients, but around estate planning, some of the changes around grantor trusts.
Yeah, there's a lot here. It's lowering exemption amounts on estates back to where they were several years in the past. So essentially those limits have been cut in half. Still, you have to have a pretty large estate before this really begins to affect you. I think one of the more meaningful changes of this is certain grantor trusts. They're now included in a decedent's estate for estate tax purposes. That is a big change there. So, people used to employ different estate planning trust strategies like irrevocable life insurance trust, for example, to help remove assets from an estate, and it sounds like that is changing in a big way. So, for those that have estates $5 million plus, single or double that for married, it begins to be something to watch and pay attention to and maybe start planning around depending on the size of your estate. So
yeah, I think that's a great point too, around ILITs or irrevocable life insurance trusts. That's we're going to see some, or we are potentially going to see some changes there. So if you do have an ILIT, it might be time to talk to your planner or your estate planning attorney. One other thing that actually we didn't put into the notables article, but I thought we'd hit on, one of the things that aren't in the new proposed tax plan is around SALT tax or state and local taxes. So in the Trump tax plan, there was a limit to the amount of state and local taxes that you could deduct from your federal taxes. And a lot of folks living in more heavily taxed states, that affected pretty heavily. So although it is not in the tax plan, a lot of folks think that in whatever final plan comes out or the actual bill, that's something that is potentially going to be in there too. So something to consider. Anything else on that, Ryan?
I think it's one of those things that's been up for debate ever since it went in into place. So yeah, I wouldn't be surprised to see them continue to kind of bicker over that one and see the future of that. But yeah, as Eric pointed out, it's not in there now. So we shall see.
We shall see. All right, well, that concludes our part of the kind of our biggest takes from the plan. Again, we'd love to hear your feedback on this format. And if you are listening to the end of this, congratulations. We got through a whole bunch of tax code. So great job on that. Ryan, anything else to add there?
Maybe the last thing would just be some of the other links that we've tagged in this week's notables. You know, if you are bored and have nothing to do and you want to read through this subtitle I titled Responsibly Funding Our Priorities, it's in there. You know, have at it. If you're having trouble sleeping at night, I'm sure that'll help. Some other things we've included, just a history of revolution around U.S. taxation, kind of what that looks like going over the past 250 years, and also some highlights of historical tax rates. You know, I think it's interesting to go back in time, you know, as early as the early 80s to see, you know, tax rates were very different back then. And by historical standards, you know, these tax rates are still historically low. You know, so going back to the early 80s, it didn't take a lot of income to get you back up into a marginal rate of 70%. So, you know, it's something to keep in mind. But aside from that, I think that's, I think we covered it all.
Perfect. Well, thanks. Yeah, in a lot of these notables, all the material that comes out from these things, you know, Ryan and I put that together ourselves, and we get it from feedback from clients and friends of Clarity Capital. So if you have any feedback or if you have any other items that you'd like to see an article on, keep us in mind and shoot us an email or a text. We'd love hearing from you and we'd love to hear your feedback on this. So from there, you're going to hear a whole bunch of compliance stuff. So enjoy that, and we will talk to you next time. Thanks.
Thank you.
Clarity Capital Management LLC is a registered investment advisor in the state of Oregon. The views expressed in this recording are that of the participants on the date of the recording and do not necessarily reflect the views of Clarity Capital Management itself. Nothing contained in this recording should constitute investment, tax, legal, or other advice and should not be viewed as a current or past recommendation or solicitation of an offer to buy or sell any securities or to adopt any investment strategy. Advisory services are only offered to clients where our firm and representatives are properly licensed or exempt from licensure. No advice may be rendered by our firm unless a client service agreement is in place. Information in this recording is based on current market conditions, which will fluctuate and may be superseded by subsequent market events or for other reasons. Clarity Capital Management does not assume any duty to update forward-looking statements. The information in this recording has been developed internally and with sources deemed to be reliable and makes no representation or warranty expressed or implied is made or given by or on behalf of Clarity Capital Management as to the accuracy, fairness, or completeness in the information contained in this recording. Any liability as a result of this recording, including direct, indirect, special, or consequential loss damage, is expressly disclaimed. Copyright Clarity Capital Management LLC, all rights reserved.